Well, I wonder how you got ready to come to this morning. How did you get ready? I know that mass generalisation, but men and women are different in getting ready. How did maybe you as men get ready? Did you just get up and splash your face and brush your teeth, throw on your nearest suit and tie, and turn up? At the same time, did you watch your wife get ready? Perhaps as she was looking in the mirror. You know what it's like, those full-length mirrors. You start off at the top and you're doing your face and your hair, and then you notice the top you're wearing and you think, well, that doesn't quite go, let me change that. And then you realise, well, the bottoms don't go either, the skirt. And then you change that. Finally, it's the shoes, and you think, well, that doesn't go either. And then you turn to your husband and you say, honey, I need a new pair of shoes. I wonder, when you're getting ready, is it distracting? Is there something that distracts you as you're looking in the mirror trying to get ready for something? Here in chapter 12 of Luke, Jesus is trying to get people ready. He's trying to get people ready. And he wants people to take a really good look at themselves and make sure that they're ready. He's trying to get people to take a really good look at themselves and make sure they're ready for a very, very big event. This record of Luke, it's written to Theophilus. Luke calls Theophilus the most excellent Theophilus. So in chapter 1, verse 4, that he'll know the certainty of the things that he's been taught. Theophilus is most probably like a wealthy man, and Luke gives him this orderly account. Here's the first volume, Luke, and then the second volume is Acts. But here in the first volume, it records the birth of Jesus, the life of Jesus, and then his death, and then his resurrection, and then his ascension. And from the time that Jesus is born to the time that Jesus leaves and ascends into heaven, Luke records what Jesus is saying. And if you read the book of Luke, you'll find that Jesus is saying that the Son of Man, Jesus himself, will return. And when he returns, that is the day that everybody has got to be ready for. That's what Luke writes, that the Son of Man will return, and on that day, everybody will stand before God, and Jesus wants to get people ready for that day. And all these chapters in Luke, these are all chapters between the what he's written to show us how people are to get ready for that day. And Jesus, the Son of Man, has not yet returned. And there's still time to get ready for that day. What's really striking, though, is there in chapter 11. What's really striking is these religious people, the Pharisees, who we didn't read about, they have an appearance that's religious. They have an appearance that says they might be getting ready for this day. But Jesus turns around and says, they're just a bunch of hypocrites. Here's what you'd expect, a bunch of religious people, the Pharisees, who look like they're getting ready for the day. But actually, Jesus is saying, well, you're just a bunch of hypocrites. They say one thing, and they do another. They tell people to do one thing, and then they themselves don't even do it themselves. And here at the beginning of chapter 12, there's a large crowd starting to gather. Meanwhile, when a crowd of many thousands had gathered so that they were trampling on one another, there's this large crowd gathering to hear Jesus. And he begins to teach them there in verse 1, be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. He's saying, look, beware of hypocrisy. He's saying the day is coming when everything is going to be revealed. Anything that people try and that hide away, you know what it means to hide away. You know, you told your child to sweep the floor and they've hid it under the fridge. That's what I used to do. Anything that people have tried to hide away will be disclosed. And Jesus is saying in chapter 12, watch out. Get ready for that day when God returns. And everyone's going to have to stand before him and give him an account of their life. He's saying get ready for it. And Jesus warns against hypocrisy. Because he's saying, well, some people think that they're ready for that day. Some people trick themselves into thinking that they're ready for that day when actually they're not. Jesus is warning against hypocrisy. Why is he warning against hypocrisy? Well, because of the consequences of that day. This is the day that has consequences that nobody can ignore. So much so that God sent his Son to come down out of heaven, to be born as a man, to tell people about that day. Can you see the lengths that God has taken to tell and warn people about this day? That he actually comes and he lives as a man. It's as if he's bringing this spiritual mirror with him and saying, look, take a good look at yourselves and say, are you ready for this day? Is God saying, and God's desiring, get ready for this day. I don't know if you've had that experience of driving along on the motorway and you're doing 70 miles an hour and then all of a sudden there's a 50 mile an hour sign. I'm sure you've all experienced it, and you're driving along 50 miles an hour and you're thinking, well, you know, why is there a 50 mile an hour sign? There's nothing going on. And you're getting frustrated because you could be driving at 70 and for miles and miles and miles, everyone's going slowly at 50 miles an hour sign. And there's not a single thing there. I don't know if you've done it at night time. I've done it at night time when you're driving along at 70 miles an hour and then all of a sudden you hit a 50 and it just feels like miles and miles. You think, why? And then you realize why. Because there's a man that's running across the motorway in this big striped vest because he's putting the cones out. And then you realize, ah, that's why they told me to slow down. Because if I didn't slow down to 50 miles an hour, in a few miles I would hit this guy and he'd be dead. For the safety of this man, and it's for my safety so that I don't end up in jail because I broke the law. Signs are there for safety. Signs are there out of care. And God doesn't just drop signs for people and say, get ready for this day. He sends his Son. He sends his Son to speak and to warn. And here Jesus is not just hanging out with people. He's telling them and warning them of hypocrisy. He's warning them out of love to get ready for the day. And he doesn't just point the finger and say, you're a hypocrite. He says, well, this is what hypocrisy is, but here's how to not be a hypocrite. Here's how to be ready for that day. And as he's trying to do that, here's this man that comes up to him, and as Jesus is talking about this very serious subject of being ready, here's a man that just comes up to him and starts talking about a completely different subject. Yet Jesus starts to speak to him. Jesus takes the time out to speak to him. And then we start finding out, but what this man actually is interested about is actually closer to the real thing than what we may think. This whole idea about being ready for the day, and we think this man's come with a completely different topic, but actually they're both connected. We can have a look at verses 13 to 15, where we look at this first point, that life is more than meets the eye. Life is more than meets the eye. Someone in the crowd said to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Jesus replied, man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? Then he said to them, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Here you've got this vast crowd listening to Jesus. He's trying to teach them to get ready for this day. And then there's this big distraction. This man comes. He says, look, teacher, tell my brother to sort the inheritance out with me. Here's a man, which what appears to be a legitimate issue, doesn't he? There's an inheritance, and he wants Jesus to come over and sort it out. Maybe there's land involved, maybe there's money, there's cattle. He wants Jesus to come and sort it out. But the Old Testament, it talks about issues like this. It had laws to ensure that inheritance was distributed and kept within family. The laws provided for this. They took into account whether there was brothers or sisters, whether there was a son or no son. The law specified how to deal with matters like this, so that property was kept within the family. There was a law for it. What does Jesus say? It's not my job. You've got a law for it. It's not my job to come and sort out this issue of whose inheritance this is and how it should be split. It's not my job to come and sort out your family affairs. Am I a real estate person? Am I a judge or am I an arbiter between you and your brother? Jesus is saying, well, these are not the affairs that I came to sort out. Jesus primarily didn't come to sort out the difficulties that this man had with his brother. There were other people that could do that. This man could have gone to the local rabbi. He could have gone and the local rabbi could have read out some of the laws in Deuteronomy 21, 15 to 17, or Numbers 27, 1 to 11, and he could have read them out and interpreted it for this man, and the rabbi could have dealt with this issue. But here's Jesus telling people how to get ready for this very, very important day. And what's this man's biggest distraction? It's wealth. It's land. It's his greed. Here is Jesus, as if he's trying to teach the whole crowd. Then a man comes up to him, and then he goes back to the crowd, and he says, look, be on your guard. Watch out. Here's a perfect illustration, this man. Be on your guard. Watch out. Because a man's life doesn't, there in verse 15, consist in the abundance of his possessions. Life does not consist of created things. It doesn't consist of created things. It doesn't consist in the abundance of his possessions. And the question is, well, if it doesn't consist in the abundance of his possessions, then what does a man's life consist of? What is a man's life? What is man? For that, you've got to go right to the beginning of the Bible, to a time when the world didn't exist. Genesis 1, the Spirit of God hovering over the waters. The earth was formless, it was dark and empty, and then God created the world. Day 1, light and darkness. Day 2, water, sky. Day 3, land, seas, vegetation. Day 4, lights in the sky, the sun, the moon, the stars. Day 5, creatures of the sky, creatures of the sea. Day 6, creatures of the land. And then the pinnacle. He created man. He created man in his image. He created man in his image. He created a spiritual being. He created a spiritual man and woman in his image. He created them with a soul. Here was the purpose of creating man, not to just be a man or a robot, but to create a man who would enjoy a relationship with God. That's man. Somebody created with a soul to be in a spiritual relationship with man. Here is man and here is God. Not just man and to be in a relationship with things, but man to be in a relationship with God. And God gave us things to enjoy, but he didn't give them to have a relationship with them and to find just enjoyment from them. For life does not consist in the abundance of a man's possessions. It's supposed to consist in a relationship with God. Isn't that great this morning that you can think of yourself not as an accident, not as some random act of the cosmos that you just so happened, but you were created for a purpose, to be in a relationship with God. Yet what did man choose? What did man choose? Man chose to sever his relationship with God. He chose not God, but created things. He chose to fill his life with possessions and things. Adam and Eve chose to sever their relationship with God, and every other person since Adam and Eve has chosen to sever their relationship with God and find enjoyment in created things and the abundance of their possessions. You see, man has been made a spiritual being in the image of God. And here's a real distraction, isn't it, to what getting ready for this day is? It's greed. And greed is something that everyone's good at. It's normal for us to do. It's saying, I don't want God in my life, I just want the things that he gives. I'll take the first 6 days of creation, I'll take the first 5 days of creation, but on that six, you know, I'll just leave that, I'll leave the relationship with God, I'll just have everything good that he gives. Man has replaced God with possessions. And Jesus says, watch out, be on your guard, because life is much more than that. Life is supposed to be a relationship with God. There's more to life than meets the eye. Yet here's this man, he's blinded because he's more interested in created things, in possessions, rather than listening to Jesus about getting ready for this day than where he would meet God. I don't know what it's like. You know, I'm sure you've experienced this when you've given something to someone. Yeah, maybe you're a parent and you've given something to a child and you've taken the care to give it. And you're really excited about giving it, but when you do give it to that child, or you do give it to that friend, there are those times, aren't they? You know, men, you all know what it's like. Your wife gives you a present, 5 pairs of socks. Disappointed. Disappointed with what you've been given. More interested in the things rather than the giver. What about God? People more interested in the things that he gives rather than him himself. See, how do you think God treats those who ignore him and his goodness? This man had issues, didn't it? This man had issues with his brother. It's as if his relationship with his brother was severed. That's why he came to Jesus and said, can you sort it out? And Jesus is saying, well, I haven't come to sort that out. I've come to sort out something far bigger than that. I've come to sort out a severed relationship with man and God. I haven't come to sort out your problems between, you know, your family disputes. I've come to sort out something far bigger, your relationship with man and God, which is severed. You see, there's plenty of people that can go and sort your issue out. Go to the rabbi. There's plenty of people that can sort your dispute out. Go to them. But who's going to sort out your dispute with you and God? There's only one who can do that. And it's Jesus. God himself, the Son of God, doing what man can't do. It's worth listening to him, isn't it? Jesus, the Son of God. And here he tells them this parable. Here he tells them this earthbound story that helps earthly people know how to understand and relate to God. If life, there's more than meets the eye. Secondly, life's problem is more than we might know. Life's problem is more than we might know. He tells the story about this rich man. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. And there I'll store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. Here's a certain rich man who's got a problem in his life. He's rich, he's got a good crop. He hasn't got enough space, he doesn't know where to put them. He's got a problem. And I'm sure you can all understand this predicament. Women, how many pairs of shoes do you have? Where do you put them? Men, you know, this is my space, isn't it? This is my space, this is your space. Your space is over there, this is my space. It's a wise question, isn't it, for this man? He's got a good crop. Where's he going to put them? It's a really important issue. And I'm sure it's one that many of you would be telling people in the younger generation. Save money. Be prudent. Don't spend above your means. You know, our economy, face it, it's a bit of a disaster, isn't it? Why is it a disaster? Well, because people have spent far too much money. So his question's a really wise one. I've got this crop. What shall I do with it? And he's got a wise answer, isn't he, in verse 18? I'll knock what I've got down, and I'll build bigger ones. I'll knock what I've got down, I'll build bigger ones. What do the women do? They would clear the space, say, husband, you take your things and you put them over there. My space, bigger space. Husband, you go and take your stuff and put them in the garage. Then husband realizes, well, let's put the wife in the garage. That's your house. It's a wise thing, isn't it? It makes sense. Just knock them down, build bigger ones. But it's a major renovation, isn't it? It would have probably been a big investment for him to knock them down, build bigger ones. And do you see how it pays off? It's fantastic. It sounds very good in verse 19. And I'll say to myself, you've got plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. Retire. Be happy. Eat and drink and be merry. It sounds good, doesn't it? I think it sounds good. I'm sure some of you think it sounds good in the sense of, well, I can now put my feet up. Here is someone who's got a problem in life. He solves it, and his future is sorted. It looks great. He He's a great problem solver. He would have made a great politician. But is life's problem more than we might know? What is he living for? What is he living for? Is he living for possessions or his soul? Well, it's obvious, isn't it? It's possessions. It's his crops. It's his goods. It's his barns. And the question you might ask, is that a bad thing? Is it a bad thing that he's living for his possessions and he's being prudent and he's being wise and he's saving? Well, even if you go back to the account of creation, go back to Genesis 1. What does God say? He says, well, fill the earth, subdue it, use it, grow it, eat it, make it, enjoy it, live in it. There is absolutely nothing wrong with enjoying the goodness of God's creation. There's nothing wrong with enjoying everything that he's given. There's nothing wrong with having possessions. There's nothing wrong with having lots of possessions. There's nothing wrong with having millions. There's nothing wrong with it. If that's not life's problem, then what is? Well, if he's not living for something that's necessarily wrong, for these possessions, which God has said enjoy anyway, then we have to ask the question, well, who is he living for? Did you see that in verse 17 to 19? He said to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I'll say to myself, you've got plenty of good things laid for many years. Take life easy. Eat and drink and be merry. Here's a man who thinks of himself. Here's a man who asks himself. Here's a man who assesses himself. Here's a man who decides himself. He says to himself, he looks after himself, he considers himself, and he only enjoys himself. Here's a man who, from the outset, it looks like he appears to be living for good things when actually he's not living for God. He's living for his body and not his soul. He's living for himself. It's greed, isn't it? Those verses are just littered with it, aren't they? With greed. He's only concerned about his riches and his investment. And Jesus has already pointed out and said, watch out. Be on your guard against all kind of greed, because life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. What's going to happen to this man if he doesn't look after his soul? Well, what is greed? What is greed here? Well, it's not acknowledging God, is it? It's not giving to God what is due. Greed is sin, saying that I am more important than God. And you know what? It's more of a problem than we might think. Because thirdly, our lives are not our own. Our lives are not our own. Verses 20 and 21. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be for anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich towards God. What does God say to him in this parable? He says, you fool. He's saying, you fool. He's saying, what about the life to come? God created spiritual beings. Spiritual beings who are created to live forever. Man was not created to die. God did not make people so that they would die. God created spiritual beings that they would live forever, yet people destroyed that. They sinned and death came into the world. But people do live forever. Between this life and the next life is the day that Jesus is warning about. The day that stands between this life and the next. And this is the day that he came to warn people about. This is the day that everybody has to face. This is the day that all mothers and fathers and children have to face. This is the day of judgment where everybody who has ever lived and will live will have to give an account of how they live their life before God. What's going to happen on that day? when every man and woman and child will have to give an account to God. They're going to stand there naked before God. They're going to stand there naked. It's as if they're going to stand there naked, as if they're going to have nothing with them. And there in verse 20 it says, well, your life will be demanded at any time. You'll take nothing with you. I mean, who's going to get what you've prepared for yourself? You'll have nothing with you. This is the day. It's a universal day. It's for all people who've been created by God. And it's as if God's saying, this very night, it's as if this man wasn't even ready for the day. He wasn't even ready for the biggest meeting of his life to meet with God. And his soul will be demanded from him because he was not rich towards God. You see, on that day, there are two destinations. On that day, for every person who was created, there are two destinations. There's an eternity in heaven, and there's an eternity in hell. There's an eternity in heaven where we can live with God and be with him, where there will be no more dying and no more pain and no more persecution and no more suffering. But there'll also be a hell where God isn't there. And there's none of God's goodness. And the Bible says that's a reality. And that is the day that Jesus is telling us to get ready for. Here is Jesus giving a warning in love. Here is Jesus giving a warning in love and saying, get ready for this day. This isn't a joke. This isn't something that, you know, you get dressed up and you go to church for on a Sunday and you get, oh, that's nice. This is serious. Get ready for this day. Because our lives are not our own. But here's the real problem. Who has been rich towards God? Who has been rich towards God? Who deserves to live forever? Who has lived a life of no greed? Who has put God first all the time? Who? The answer is no one. Who has considered themselves and thought, well, God is more important? Who has been a sinner? Everyone. Who deserves to go to heaven? No one. It's as if you're knocking on the door of heaven. Who should get in? No one. Who's been rich towards God? No one. Isn't it great that Jesus says, well, I'm not just going to point out your hypocrisy. I'm not just going to tell you that no one's been rich towards God. But he's also going to give us an answer. You read the rest of Luke. What did Jesus come to do? Well, he came to be the arbiter. He came to be the mediator between us and God. He came to be the one who would stand in the way. He came to be the one who would go to a cross and on the cross would die for us. On the cross, who would die for us. And on that cross, he would take all the greed. He would take all the selfishness. He would take all the punishment that we deserve. He would pay the price of hell in our place. He's the one who came to stand between us and God. And you might think, well, that's great. Does that mean that everybody goes to heaven? Because Jesus has dealt with all our wrongdoing. Jesus has dealt with all our sin. Well, no. You know, it's one of those strange periods in celebrity news, isn't it? There's lots of confession going on. You notice that? There's lots of confession going on amongst the sports stars and celebrities. Tiger Woods confessing, you know, I've had this many affairs. And if you remember that he stood up at in a press conference, it was a very private one, and he stood there and he said, I've been unfaithful to my wife and I've done all these horrible things. John Terry, sorry, done this. Take that star, Mark Owen, I did this. But you know, confession is not just to man, but it needs to be to God. It needs to say, I'm sorry to God for what I've done. Here is Jesus. He comes and stands in the way. He says, I've died for you. Now, if you will trust in me and confess and turn from your sin, then I will forgive you. So that on that day of judgment, then you will not perish, but you will have life forever and be with God. There in Luke chapter 13, a few people are asking, well, you know, who's worse? You know, are these sinners worse than these? It might be a question. So, well, I'm just not as bad as these other people. But what does he say in chapter 13, verse 5? I tell you, no, but unless you repent, you too will all perish. It doesn't matter what you think about other people. Jesus is saying it matters about you. Have you repented? Have you turned from your sin? Have you turned and said to God, I need you, I need to trust in you, I need to say sorry for what I've done, for all the greed and the selfishness, and now I want to trust you, and now I want to live a life that's being rich towards you. Now I want to serve you. Now I want to follow you. Now I want to obey you. Jesus says, unless you repent, you'll perish. Are we ready for that day? That day which says, well, Jesus says, it could come any time. We could die any time. He could come back any time. Are we ready for that day? It's been a sorry old state, hasn't it, with the rugby for Wales. It's been pretty poor. Wales have been described as the comeback kings. You know what I mean, the last 20 minutes, comeback kings. And there, Jonathan Edwards, sitting there at halftime yesterday, say, well, you know, I don't know what to say. I know we're behind, but, you know, Wales are the comeback kings. Did they come back? No. What do some people think? Well, yeah, I know I need to repent. I know I need to come to God, and I need to say sorry for him, but I'll do that later. I'll do that when I'm really close to my death. Jesus says, this night, nothing is certain. This night, your life will be demanded from you. Are you getting ready for this day? What does Jesus say? Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. It's a strong word Jesus used for that man, wasn't it? You fool. You read the rest of that chapter, I challenge you to read it. Look at how God promises to provide everything for people who follow him. Now, look at how much he promises. And as we sing 154, there in verse 3, my every need he richly will supply, nor will his mercy ever let me die. In him there dwells a treasure all divine, and matchless grace has made that treasure mine.